Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. We're talking about hotels this week. The hotel, it's a place that conjures an image that's a mix of comfort and little mystery, utility, but also anticipation. It's a place to rest, sure, it's a place to relax. It's a place that's both familiar. There's a bed, a bathroom, a TV, probably Wi-Fi, but it's also new because it's not your bed, it's not your bathroom after all. It's a place to call home for a night, a weekend, maybe a week. South Florida's business is hospitality, and a good part of its history has been made by hotels. It was the Breakers Hotel that was originally at the end of the train line built by Henry Flagler before he pushed further south, eventually all the way to Key West. The Biltmore in Coral Gables, the Park Central in South Beach, the Colony Hotel in Delray Beach, the Rat Pack-era Fontainebleau, the Beatles at the Deauville Hotel, the Escape Hotel in Fort Lauderdale. These names beckon visitors with sun, sand, carefree days, and plenty of fun at night.
The calendar fibs. December, you say? Look here, something's crooked. Feels more like May. It's June in Miami, and we ought to know, for we're going swimming while you're shoveling snow.
And the messaging hasn't changed much since those days of Miami.
It's time for a new spin. In a place where happy meets go lucky. Hello, Sunny. Get to know Greater Fort Lauderdale.
South Florida's biggest export is its image as an easygoing tropical metropolis on the ocean. It's still at the core of what the hospitality industry here sells to visitors. And there are plenty of buyers. A record number of tourists visited Florida last year, almost 95 million of them. They directly support more than 1 million jobs. And while the hospitality industry tends to get the blame for relatively low-paying jobs in the Sunshine State, it is the business one out of every seven Floridians count on for a paycheck. The hotel business is booming. Room prices are rising, real estate values have recovered, and reservations are mostly full. Optimism is fueling a building and renovation boom in hotels. From Key West to the Palm Beaches, thousands of new hotel rooms will be inviting guests to come and stay over the next 2 years. Family-run operations and multinational financiers are active, betting on South Florida's magnetism to be irresistible. After all, it's been attracting visitors for generations.
When I came down on a train in 1955, when I was about 10 years old, came down here with my parents, I thought it was very exciting.
I used to come down here with my parents during the 50s and vacationed.
Those are two voices of two longtime real estate and hotel developers, one who's about to open his first resort development in Miami Beach, Richard Lafrack, and one who shook up the hotel business from South Florida, Ian Schrager. The two had similar introductions to South Florida's kids with their parents escaping the 1950s winters in New York.
That was before Eastern Airlines actually was flying to D.C., I guess it was six or seven down here, before jets and everything. And, of course, we were going to Florida and how exciting that was. And, you know, it was cold up north and we took the train overnight and then, you know, that was my first remembrance. Yes, it was a fun place then. It's more fun now.
We used to stay in those Art Deco efficiencies, and my mom and dad would come down here for, and my mom would stay for the season, and my father would go back and go back and forth when I was a young kid. I mean, we came to Miami. I grew up with it. I've seen Miami change. I've seen it evolve. It's just kind of amazing. The skyline of downtown Miami is just, it's incredible.
Ian Schrager there, he made his name in nightclubs as half of the Studio 54 phenomenon back in the late 1970s in New York. Schrager and his partner wound up doing 13 months in federal prison for tax evasion. But in the 34 years since his release, he's taken the strategies of Studio 54, the glitz, the glam, the high style, fun, and a hint of exclusiveness, and leveraged it in the hotel industry. He's credited with introducing the boutique hotel, first with Morgan's Hotel Group, a company he sold 10 years ago, and then with the current Egon Schrager Company. His most recent project in South Florida opened just in November. He's partnered with hotel giant Marriott International in Addition Hotels. That's a brand that uses all capital letters for the word addition. The Miami Beach Addition is doing twice as much business as anticipated, and it's already been sold. The Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, the investment arm of the Emirate of Abu Dhabi, bought the hotel just last week for a reported $230 million. This is just the latest local success for Schrager, who made his name in Miami with the Delano South Beach. In 1994, a New York Times article about the Delano's renovation was headlined, "Remaking a Hotel the Un-Miami Way." Last week, on the sidelines of the University of Miami Real Estate Impact Conference, we sat down with Traeger to hear about where Miami's hotel industry has been and where he thinks Miami is going.
I understood Miami, its essence, its DNA. So the first hotel I did outside New York, I was happy to do it in Miami because you have to kind of understand the DNA of a city when you do something. And so this was the first hotel I had ever done outside New York.
Describe that DNA. What is that DNA that you experienced?
You know, it's a kind of dichotomy. It's like Jacques Herzog says when he did his building, he did a building with his shirt off. It's kind of fashionable people that are here because they like the weather at that time anyways. They want to get away from the kind of intensity of the Northeast or in other parts of the country. And it's kind of tropical and a vacation spot, but it's also a bustling city at the same time. And I think throwing those two things together and putting it on the border of the Caribbean and South America gives it a real international kind of energy.
How do all those feed into a business model? As an entrepreneur looking to make a profit via a real estate development or operating and owning a hotel, how does that figure into that model?
Well, it's international. You know, it's also a city looks a certain way. You know, when I did my first hotel down here, everyone was painting their buildings pastel colors, which is also what they do in the Caribbean because they don't have really distinctive architecture, so they paint colors. I wanted to try and capture that kind of American tropical feeling that I had down here, surrounded by this like international gateway city, but at the same time, you know, straddle the fence between being tropical and sleepy and balmy on the beach, and intense, serious fun at night.
Is it a good place to do business? As you look at your portfolio of hotels and how that's grown in the Northeast and London and elsewhere, compare the opportunity that you have today in Miami compared to what you had when you first looked at that hotel on South Beach.
Miami is a completely different place. When I did the Delano, there was a paradigm shift, and I happened to be lucky that I kind of ushered in that new era, and I think there's a paradigm shift again. It's no longer simply a resort area for a certain section of the country or for Canada or even in the northern countries of the Europe. It's truly become an international gateway city, you know, with architecture and performing arts centers and a ballet and sports teams and restaurants and museums on a par with any great city around the world. That is a new phenomenon. And also, you notice that a lot of times great cities always have other areas other than the downtown area. You know, in New York, you have Tribeca and Soho and the East Village and the West Village and Chelsea and Gramercy Park and so on and so forth. Miami never had that until recently with the design district in Wynwood and the Biscayne Boulevard corridor and Midtown I just heard before. And so that to me is a mark of a true international city when you have these other sections growing up around the traditional hub of the city.
What did you recognize that allowed you to take that risk with the Delano, and what has that risk allowed you to do now in Miami?
You know, Miami always had the fundamentals. You know, the fashions change, airline travel brought a paradigm shift here. But it always had the fundamentals. It was on the beach. The weather was good. There's a multiplicity of flights. The access is easy. And so maybe the fashion changes, but the fundamentals are always present, ever present. And I think those same fundamentals are present today. That's why it's so attractive to people.
What was it, though, about the boutique model of hotel that you think was so key for the Delano and for the South Beach of that era that allowed it to flourish?
The Delano was the first hotel down here. I mean, up to that time, they had a bunch of hotels that weren't really hotels on Ocean Drive.
What do you mean by that?
They were restaurants with rooms on top. They were really focused on being restaurants. The hotel, the rooms, rooming houses, the rooms were complete afterthoughts. You know, they had the Fountain Blue, which was a big convention hotel with a very inexpensive rate. There was no other hotel down here. I think when the Delano opened up, and the Delano opened up before the Lowe's and before any of the other hotels, it showed everybody that you could do a hotel, it could be successful, and you could make money. And that opened up the floodgate. And that started it all. I think, again, with the addition, it's that same opportunity again, but it's a different place now. It's a world-class place. It's really a global city on the par with Paris and Tokyo and New York. And I think in order to keep pace with that, the level of sophistication and the achievement has to be raised a notch.
You're part of raising that up, certainly. And what are you experiencing then in the local workforce's ability to follow through with the vision that you have as an upscale hotelier?
Well, there are a lot of people down here that are looking for work, like all around the country. And so the labor pool, the depth of the labor pool was good. It's growing. The industry is coming down here. So it's kind of, I think perhaps a lot of labor people came down here for service jobs. I think it's changing, you know, and I think it's getting better, and I think we'll continue to improve.
Is Miami at risk of believing its own good press? When we hear from global hotel operators and developers like yourself about Miami being on the edge of greatness, becoming a global city, is it running the risk of believing that too much and perhaps ignoring what has allowed it to come here?
Well, it's not on the edge. It is a global city.
It
really is. It's also has a tradition of boom or bust, and it's cyclical. But that doesn't trouble me because it is already a great city, and it's only going to be getting greater, and it's only going to be expanding, and it's only going to be getting more sophisticated and more attractions. And demographically, I am now hearing, you know, I'm my own focus group, and I'm hearing lots and lots of people that want to live in Miami now.
And do you include yourself in that?
Yeah. I mean, it's nice living down here. It's easier than the Northeast. It's pretty. You know, when you come home from work in January and February, I mean, you can go outside, play tennis, go for a swim, or go out on your boat, or go bicycle riding. Can't do that in the Northeast. And so I think a lot of people are realizing they don't want to sacrifice that. And it hasn't been by mistake that the three fastest-growing states are Florida, Texas, and California. For good reason.
Let me ask you about operating a hotel in different climates. Miami Beach occupancy has been close to record highs. Revenue per available room has continued to increase. Talk to me about what you are seeing in terms of the supply and demand of the hotel room in Miami.
Well, there's a lot of supply coming in Miami Beach, and there's also supply coming in Miami. You know, that's just a fact of life. I think the way you deal with the vagaries of the economy and the way you deal with an increase in supply is just build a better mousetrap. And to me, everything is about the product. There's nothing more important than the product. And so when you build a hotel, you realize that there's a little barrier to entry, but not very much, more so on the beach than there is in Miami. But, you know, you try and build the best mousetrap, and if you do something really great, it'll withstand the extra supply. You know, Apple, you know, only has about 15% of the cell phone market, but yet they still get a premium. They still have a critically acclaimed cell phone and company, and I think I have that kind of same approach about building a great product.
So what's next for your design focused hotel product in Miami Beach? Is Miami a place to test out concepts and designs that you may try elsewhere?
Well, Miami's sophisticated. So I don't have to hold back and make an adjustment for the city. You know, I want to do what the people of the city want. And
how would you describe that? What do your visitors want?
Well, it all depends on the city. You know, like I think, for instance, like there are other cities like Chicago and Boston that perhaps couldn't be as edgy as you can in Miami and New York and L.A. and London. There's only a few places that, you know, you could really, you know, that the people will really respond to something that's really avant-garde and daring. Other cities are not like that.
What's the hotel that's going to work for Miami Beach in the next decade that you're going to be behind?
You know, I think it's going to be really more sophisticated, and the service is going to be great.
How so? Describe the sophistication. How does that articulate itself? Well, can the chandeliers get any more interesting, or the tile floor get any more exotic?
I can't give you a formula for it. The only formula is there is no formula. You know, it's like it's just good taste. You know, it's hard to define it, but we all know when we see it. And irregardless of education or wealth or age, everybody kind of gets it. You know, it's just, I wish I could write a book about what it is, but it's something in instinctive. But I think as the city attracts more sophisticated people, more global travelers, more people that have been there and done that and have seen lots of things, it requires a higher level of excellence to do something that resonates with those people. So you're not going to get away in Miami Beach with just painting the outside of the building pink. It's not enough anymore.
Ian Schrager, the one-time owner of the Delano South Beach, a branding partner in Addition Hotel in Miami Beach, which was just sold to Middle East investors. Still to come on our program, the family hotel business booming and renovating on the beach.
We should be close to full tonight, and it just seems significantly stronger this year than even in previous years.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, talking about the hotel industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. It's been 21 years since Ian Schrager shook up the South Florida hotel industry with his Delano Hotel on Collins Avenue. The renovations and design ushered in a new era of hospitality for the beach. The Delano's chic concepts continue reverberating today. Schrager hasn't owned the Delano for a decade. But just one block up Collins is the Hotel Marseille. It's been owned and operated by Lloyd Mandel for a generation. He bought the hotel on Collins Avenue between 17th and 18th Streets with his wife back in 1978. He was almost embarrassed to say when we spoke in its lobby how much they paid. It was a little more than $1 million. The hotel stands among the boutique South Beach hotels, some owned by out-of-town investors, others run by big multinational conglomerates, others by independent hometown families. It's a narrow lobby at the Hotel Marseille. Outside, no parking, just a semicircle driveway, just big enough to squeeze in two cars at a time off Collins. And it's the lobby where Lloyd Mandel started his renovation project that is now nearing completion.
The original project was to change a few pieces of furniture in the lobby. And every day that went by, it became clear that we had to increase the extent of the project, because clearly in this business, we are judged. In the hospitality business, you're judged by your weakest link. So if you do 90% of the project and you don't do the last 10%, everyone in the public is going to judge you by the 10% that's not done, not by the 90% that is done. Most projects are not done the way this one was. Normally, they're planned out completely in advance. We did change from only planning on changing some furniture to taking the approach that we had to get everything right.
It eventually grew into a $10 million project that's included renovating rooms, remodeling the pool area, new cabanas, and poolside bar and grill. Mandel's son, Stephen, moved back from New York to help, leaving his job as a technology consultant to get involved in the family business. It makes him the third generation in hospitality in Miami Beach. Stephen's grandfather, Ben Mandel, built and ran the Westview Hotel that grew out of a gas station that was at West Avenue and 9th. There's a Starbucks and parking garage there now. The Marseille Hotel was around back in those days. It was built during a Miami Beach boom just after World War II, built in 1947. Before this $10 million remodeling, though, Stephen describes the hotel this way.
Frozen in time, we could say. And I grew up in this hotel, and I remember playing out here, and I remember what was here, and it was a lot of shuffleboard courts, because a long time ago, there was the type of clientele that was playing shuffleboard. It was popular, and they were that's what was here, mostly. It was just strips of shuffleboard courts.
Those courts are gone now, replaced by Brazilian hardwood pool decking and fencing, dipping pools with floating beds, and what will be a nest swing over a pool with room for four people. Very Miami Beach. Stephen Zad-Lloyd admits he didn't come to the remodeling project quickly. It was an emotional process after owning and running the hotel since the late 1970s. He bought it with his wife days before voters were to decide whether or not to allow casinos in Broward and Miami-Dade counties. This was the late 1970s. They sealed the deal just before the vote, worried that if it passed, they may get priced out. They bought it, voters rejected casinos, and the two now had a beachfront hotel to run. It was a tough time, several years before Miami Beach would regain some glamour, and the U.S. economy was struggling back then with high inflation, double-digit interest rates, and high energy prices.
Most of the hotels were catering to senior citizens, and while that was a strong market, at the same time it was a very economical market. And in order to augment that income, in our case, we and many other hotels also went overseas, mainly to South America, and promoted there because the markets and the economies were fairly strong at that time in many countries in Central and South America. And so what I did, along with my wife, was that we went to smaller markets and concentrated on very small markets where the our competitors were going to the larger Latin American markets, which would have been principally Argentina at that time. We went to Central America, and I would specialize in one market, for instance, Guatemala. It's a small market. There were 30 active travel agencies, and I got to know every single one of them, and they all knew me personally, and they knew our operation. And then when that petered out, we did it in other small markets in Costa Rica, then in Peru. We had done it in Ecuador, and it worked.
The neighborhood then started to change. His neighbor, the Delano, kicked off that glitzy trend of design-oriented hotels, calming colors pushed against the bold pastels of Art Deco in Miami Beach. Spa treatments replaced shuffleboard.
The changes that started several years ago with the Delano in this area, which was a great surprise to other hotel operators. The investment that was made there and the changes that were made there during a period of time that wasn't particularly booming in South Beach, started to inspire others. So right now, with the huge amount of investment that's come in to the area, that is certainly, in my case, has motivated one to rise with the tide and hopefully exceed the tide.
Mandel says business already is pretty good at Marseille Hotel. He calls occupancy rates extremely strong, thanks to his willingness to sacrifice high room rates in order to keep the house full.
However, the costs of operating a proper full-service hotel now have gone significantly higher. And in order to keep up with those expenses, and especially to maintain the proper workforce, and the skilled staffers and management, we have no choice but to have a higher rate, and we just have to provide the product so we can obtain it.
Part of the investment is in the hotel itself with this remodeling project. His initial reluctance fell away with the help of new energy as his son got involved with the business, though he admits he still has moments of hesitation, especially as the remodeling refreshes areas of the hotel that have retained his wife's touch. She passed away 10 years ago. Still to come on our program, thousands of hotel rooms coming back to the market in the Florida Keys.
When I talk to smaller properties, say, what do you think about, you know, investment companies all buying these large hotels and resorts, they say, I like it because now when people call and they like our rates and we stay pretty booked up.
This is the Sunshine Economy. Be our guest, the hotel industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. As Florida's tourism business has jumped, the number of hotel rooms in the Keys has not. The Florida Keys have been under a moratorium on new hotel rooms for decades. But the chain of islands are experiencing a flood of properties opening, mostly through renovations. Nancy Klingener is in Key West.
The waterfront area on Key West's northern shore, called the Key West Bight, was traditionally home to the island's fishing industry. Sponges, turtles, shrimp, and lobster were brought to shore here and processed before shipping to the mainland. Now the commercial fishing fleet has moved off the island, and the Bight has been renamed the Key West Historic Seaport. And the land that used to have fish houses and later a trailer park is now occupied by a brand new hotel, where rooms start at more than $400 a night.
This is my adult-only quiet pool, which is on the back of the property.
Tom Whitney is the general manager of the Marker Waterfront Resort, the new 96-room hotel that opened in December in the historic seaport. The Marker has three pools, all salt water. Every room is about 400 square feet with a private balcony. They stock the rooms with local products, from Key Lime jelly beans to Key West Aloe body wash and Key West Legal Rum. The Marker is a brand new hotel, but it aims to fit into one of the island's oldest neighborhoods.
So when you're walking around the block, you don't even realize it's a hotel. It blends in the whole setup of the resort. With the private balconies, people can feel that private sense of having their own room and their own estate here in Key West.
The Marker takes up almost 2 acres in the heart of Old Town Key West. It's the first new resort to open on the island in 20 years, but it's not the only new arrival to the hotel scene in the Keys. Throughout the island chain, 1,000 hotel rooms are coming online, either through wholesale renovations of older properties or projects like the Marker, which replaced a trailer court. There are a total of 15,000 hotel rooms in the Keys, so adding 1,000 within a year is a big deal. That's adding more than 6% to the total lodging base. Tourism is a big deal in the Keys. The islands have about 73,000 residents and 4 million visitors a year, 3 million of whom stay overnight. That's according to Harold Wheeler, director of the county's Tourist Development Council. The Keys usually lead the state in both occupancy and average daily room rates. A report from Smith Travel Research shows that countywide, rooms went for an average of $255 a night last year. In Key West, the average was $280. Part of that has been driven by having so many units under renovation and off the market, Wheeler said. And the impacts have been felt in other ways, not just near the hotels that were closed or demolished.
It also, believe it or not, helped in Big Pine Key area and also in Marathon because people, you know, they stayed close enough that they still could come down at night or whatever to restaurants in Key West.
But the renovation hurt other businesses that rely on the hotels and their guests, like the Key West Dive Shop that used to use a hotel pool for training. The pool was drained and destroyed to make way for a new property.
When that went away, there was nowhere else to go. And as far as a deep pool, for the rates they were looking for divers to come into Key West, so that actually hurt their business here in Key West.
Wheeler has led the Keys Tourism Agency for almost 20 years. One major change in the industry he's seen is who's buying the resorts. These days, it's investment companies.
They're very concerned about the revenue coming in. Don't seem to be as involved as the family-owned properties in types of events and activities in the area.
But for the remaining mom-and-pop motels or owner-run guest houses, it turns out the new competition is a good thing.
When I talk to smaller properties, say, what do you think about, you know, investment companies all buying these large hotels and resorts, they say, I like it because now when people call and they like our rates and we stay pretty booked up.
With Arctic weather in the north and low gas prices fueling travel, all of the Keys are booked up right now. Keys hotel owners and tourism promoters are betting that the trip to get your own little piece of the rock, even if only overnight, is worth the money. I'm Nancy Klingener in Key West.
Still to come on our program, South Florida's hotel evolution continues attracting deep-pocketed developers.
It's probably the only place that was a resort that grew into a city, and I think that's unique in the United States. I mean, originally people came here for the beach, and then the city kind of grew up next to the beach.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy talking about hotels in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Richard Lefrak is a second-generation real estate tycoon. He doesn't have the bombastic style of Donald Trump or the hometown name recognition like Stephen Ross, owner of the Dolphins. But Lefrak is one of the wealthiest real estate developers and largest landlords in New York. His empire has grown beyond that base to now include oil and gas wells, farmland, even an Italian wireless broadband internet provider. In 2009, when the banking industry was falling apart and South Florida real estate had collapsed, Lefrak was part of a group that bought a collection of loans from a Chicago-area bank. Most of the loans had gone bad thanks to the Great Recession. The deal made the investor group one of the largest landlords of empty condos in South Florida. Those condos are no longer empty. Members of that same investor group went after a foreclosed Miami Beach resort next. It was 2012 when they bought the Ganzevoort Hotel for $100 million. They've spent many hundreds of millions of dollars more renovating the property, and it's due to open as the rebranded One Hotel and Homes in mid-March. It's Lefrak's first big play in South Florida, bringing together two of our area's economic cornerstones, real estate and hospitality.
I think South Florida, Miami, the greater Miami area, Fort Lauderdale, and the whole complex on the east coast of, south of Palm Beach, is on the precipice of becoming one of the great cities or super cities in the world. It's only natural that a real estate developer would be attracted to a opportunity like that.
What is it about this time, though, in the early part of the 21st century that's attracting to you? What are the trends that you see that are adding to that on the edge of a global city?
Well, I think there's been a tremendous change in Miami in the last 10 or 15 years. I think it's very palpable for the people who've been here for that period of time, and for people who've kind of been tourists and kind of coming and going, even they can grasp it, that it's becoming more exciting, a more interesting place. You have a very interesting culture here, which is dominated by a Latin influence. It's exciting and kind of a fun place to be. You have the natural attribute of the weather, which everybody enjoys. You have an aging demographic in the United States now where people, naturally, especially today when it's kind of minus zero in the rest of the country, people would be attracted to being in a warmer climate. But you can also see kind of the growth of the city and the maturity of the city in some of the cultural activities here, the whole thing, the art scene, some of which was precipitated by Art Basel coming here. And the, the new museum, the Science Museum, the Perez Museum, the Wynwood. I mean, these are all things that, individually have some value, but collectively they really kind of create a little pulse and excitement in a city. And also the fact is Miami is less one-dimensional than it used to be. Description is, to me, in my mind, it's probably the only place that was a resort that grew into a city. And I think that's unique in the United States. I mean, originally people came here for the beach, and then the city kind of grew up next to the beach. And, now it's an exciting city and an exciting beach.
And you're in the hotel industry here with the resort development that you've undertaken in South Beach. As you have looked at your portfolio of real estate development that you've done in your career, what is it about the resort development now in Miami that's attracted you to that particular slice?
Well, first of all, Miami today is recognized even more broadly as a great place to go. And if you go to the airport and you see where the planes are coming from, you don't need that much imagination. In other words, the people are coming from, obviously, from the East Coast of the United States, from the Midwest, from Canada. That's traditional. But today, if you look up in the sky, you see the planes that are coming from Moscow. The planes are coming from Qatar. The plane is coming from every European capital, every South American capital. Our business is a business, really, of demographics. You don't have to be that smart. You just have to anticipate what people like and try to get a little bit in front of it.
So I'm curious, I want to dig a little deeper about, as you look to get in front of it, what was it about the resort portion of real estate that attracted you as opposed to, say, residential development that you've been long and successful at up in the Northeast?
I hate to say it, but I'm an opportunist. It's that simple. What was great about the property? Well, it was 600 feet on the ocean. It was right next to the W, a block from Satay. I mean, it was right on Main in Maine. You couldn't get a better location in South Beach. And so we were taking something with a lot of liabilities. It was an older building. It had already failed on somebody else's renovation. But we felt that, you know, our timing was good. We bought it at a very good price. And because of that, we were able to invest a lot of money to fix it up. I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars above the purchase price. And I believe we're going to have the single best hotel in on the beach.
Tell me a little bit about the process of development after you acquired this troubled, failed property on the beach, a relatively high-profile location in South Beach. Again, your experience as a real estate developer in many different economic climates and many different business environments, how would you describe the business environment that you've encountered here in South Florida as you've developed this resort property?
With respect to the building, the first thing I found out was that when you buy a building that's that big and the building's over 1 million feet, right, and it's 40 years old, it's like renovating an old house. When you open up the wall, you never know what you're going to find. And so there was a lot of, let's say, unanticipated problems with the property that had to be dealt with in really in terms of the infrastructure. We ended up replacing all the windows to make them hurricane, up to hurricane standards, the electrical system, the plumbing, the air conditioning, I mean, the roof, you name it, all the things that nobody sees, the elevators, that cost a lot of money. So we anticipated some of it. Actually, we took 800 terraces off and rebuilt them. We didn't, because they had been deteriorated from the salt there. So that was one set of problems. Before we got to the fun part, which is what the people see, you know, how the room looks and, you know, what the ballroom is and the lobby and all the interesting venues. The other set of problems, which is really actually was serious, is, and part of, you know, what the treachery down here is, because it's a volatile market, right, the professional services are all sized to deal with the bad times, because nobody wants to invest anymore in, you know, anticipating, you know, happy times. So there's a shortage of really great professional help, okay? And that starts with, not that there aren't great architects here, there's just not enough of them. Engineers, not enough of them. You know, so all the professional services, I think we found, as soon as the market started to come back, they were all very stressed, and getting good service was tough. On the other hand, if you bring in a out-of-towner here, you know, they're looked on because they're not part of local scene. They don't get the same attention maybe from the regulatory officials that they should, because they're more familiar with the local people. So that was one set of problems. And the second set of problems really is that there's a shortage of labor, because here it's always feast or famine. So when it's famine, you know, people leave that use their hands for work. And when it's feast, there's not enough, you know, people that do construction work. So there's a shortage of basic construction, skilled construction labor and workforce.
How did you answer both of those challenges in the development?
With a lot of yelling. I mean, really, it's just, you know, you just push and stay focused every day and try to do the best you can do. Originally, I was hopeful that we would be ahead of the pack, ahead of the traffic jam, which I knew was going to come. But because we ran into some issues relative to the infrastructure, the project took about 6 months longer than we originally thought it would take. And now, you know, I'm on I-95 with the rest of the developers, you know, yelling for more help. Fortunately, we're going to be open in about a month. And so I think a lot of that will be behind us. But, you know, it's a business that you have to show up all the time. You just can't leave. It doesn't go on autopilot.
And what would you say to the broader community, given these challenges that you encountered on the project your size, with the financial resources and the experience that you bring to bear, the message to South Florida as it looks to make itself into a global city, a global hotel resort destination, is what?
Well, I think in the end, people's experience is not about the building, but it's about the service. And I would encourage everybody to make sure that the workforce that works in the hospitality business is well-trained The experiences, the hospitality experiences are defined a little, mostly by the people that work in the hotel. It's not defined by the bed. It's defined by the people who greet you and serve you while you're at the hotel.
Richard Lefrak, chairman of Lefrak. We spoke with him at the University of Miami Real Estate Impact Conference. He's partner in one of the newest hotels to enter the Miami market. One Hotel and Homes is expected to have its debut next month in what had been the Ganzevoort Hotel on Collins Avenue. Still to come, high season, low season, increasingly, South Florida hotels are always in season.
The season is not just for the 3 months when it's cold everywhere else. It's just different people who are coming at different times.
This is the Sunshine Economy, the hotel industry in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Every market is subject to the law of supply and demand. The hotel business here is no different. Annually, about 4 out of every 5 hotel rooms in Miami-Dade, Broward, and the Keys is filled up, and the cost of those rooms continues rising. Supply and demand at play here. The Keys is the home to the highest average room rate, around $250 per night. That's about $100 more than the average overnight in Broward County. Hannah Sampson covers the hotel industry for our partner, the Miami Herald.
Miami, especially, and that's translating to Fort Lauderdale now, is even more than it used to be, being seen as a global destination, a gateway city, and a place where visitors, maybe because they have been here for Art Basel and keep wanting to come back, but a place where visitors are very interested in returning to.
We hear that a lot. Gateway city, a global city. Are we at risk of believing our own press that we put out in Chicago and in Rio during those winter months?
Well, I mean, look at the numbers. In 2013, more than half of the visitors were international.
Is there still a season when it comes to the hotel business?
It's really interesting because the marketers will tell you that tourism is not a seasonal industry anymore. And in some ways that's true because they still get a lot of visitors from different parts of the world in July, for example. July is actually pretty busy. My favorite time of year is September and October because for me as a resident of Miami Beach, that's when I can get around without a lot of traffic.
It's down to that 6-week time period out of 52 weeks in the year, right?
It's really hot, but it's really easy to get anywhere that I want to go. January is busy. February and March are pretty off the charts in terms of occupancy. And but really, the season kind of goes through Memorial Day, and then maybe there's a few down weeks, and then you have summer traffic picking up. So what the marketers say is true. The season is not just for the 3 months when it's cold everywhere else. It's just different people who are coming at different times.
It's getting more expensive for those international travelers, though, to sit on Miami Beach and sip a exotic cocktail, isn't it?
Ooh, those cocktails. Just to get a room in the first place, in 2014, rates were about $185 average for an average night. So that's pretty significant, and that's a big jump from the year before, about a 6% jump.
Those international travelers had been, in years past, been able to take advantage of their strong local currencies when they come to the United States and be able to buy more because the dollar had weakened. But over the last several months, we've seen the dollar strengthen against some of those international currencies, making it more expensive for those international travelers. Is that a point of challenge for the hospitality industry?
Some hoteliers who I've spoken to have said they are pretty concerned about how that's going to shape up, not only because some of the economies that normally come here to spend money are struggling, but also because U.S. travelers who've maybe been holding off on going to Europe because the dollar wasn't so strong now see that they'll have more spending power if they go overseas. There's concern that there could be that kind of double whammy where domestic travelers are saying, yeah, I'm going to take this trip to Paris or to London instead of going to South Florida, where at the same time, travelers from South America or from Europe maybe won't be coming here.
In the years to come, we're going to see several hundred new hotel rooms come to market in Dade County, and some of those focused really on three areas. The beach, traditionally. Brickell continues to be not only a residential neighborhood, but really a magnet for business and business travelers. And then, of course, around the airport because of the convenience there.
It always takes a while to kind of absorb all of that new inventory. But when you look at the kind of compression in room rates that you see on, especially on busy weekends, you see those hotels near the airport with their rates shooting up to crazy amounts. It does take a while maybe for those new hotels to command the same pricing or to be really well known. But there's not, I mean, we'll see how this turns out in a couple of years, but at least investors who are pouring all this money into these new rooms don't seem to be worried that they won't, you know, get their money at some point in the near future.
It's really a double play on two of the traditional industries here in South Florida. I mean, it's obviously a hospitality play, but it's also a big real estate play for those investors, isn't it?
Oh, big time. And I mean, we've just seen in the last couple of years some hotels that sold maybe in 2010 or in 2012 that are turning over and making a significant amount more money to new investors who want to be in on the hospitality game. Investors who want to get in Miami now are saying, you know, we don't really see ourselves making our money back with X, Y, and Z type of projects. So maybe we'll go up to Fort Lauderdale or we'll look somewhere else for that.
Hannah, tell me, is it room service or continental breakfast?
Personally, I like a continental breakfast, or I don't eat breakfast at all. I save it for lunch.
Hannah Sampson with our partner, the Miami Herald. The hotel business, like so many others, is in the process of being disrupted. Disrupted by consumer tastes, which have always evolved. And now technology, changing what visitors even consider a room. Online sharing sites like Airbnb offer tourists and property owners a chance to do business outside the usual and traditional hotel industry. However a visitor comes to stay with us, it's their money and our hospitality that fuels it. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.